Morning. Today's gospel is the very last part of the narrative of Jesus' public ministry. Next section, next verse, begins chapter 13. That's that sermon on the kingdom. And then 14 and 15 is the passion narrative, and 16 the resurrection narrative. So this ends the public ministry. Isn't that a funny place to end? I mean, it's a nice little story about this widow, but does it carry the weight that you'd want to use it as your parting shot? Don't they teach you in law school that you open with your best witness, close with your second best witness? Is this Mark's second best witness? Well, let's take a look at it. Then we'll squeeze it and see what it yields. But first, literally, just take a look at it. I want you to learn it. Memorize it. Not word for word in the narrative, but in the eye, in the mind, picture. Close your eyes for a minute. Create the picture. Jesus is in the temple. He spent the past couple of days back and forth in discussion and debate with scribes and Herodians and Pharisees and Sadducees and priests and high priests and whoever's. He's on the tired side. Sits down on one of those little ledges that run around in public places. A couple of apostles sitting nearby, some on the ground, some on the ledge, some chatting. And you can see one of the collection boxes. There are about a dozen of them. Like the poor boxes we have in the back of church. Only they were bigger. They were about the size of a chest. And they had a horn on them. A spiral that opened up like a French horn thing. You drop the money in. The reason it spiraled was twofold. First of all, it was like security. Like the mailbox, you know, you can put in but you can't take out. You couldn't reach down and scoop out what was in there. And secondly, it was made of metal and it was, you know, tuned like a horn. So when you dropped coins in there, you could hear the noise. Well, you know, this attracted attention to you and everybody looked at you and knew you were putting money in the treasury. Made you feel good and therefore you're more likely to come more often and put in more money. So they did that. A lot of folks doing that. Some fairly wealthy folks putting in fairly large sums. And you can tell they're large sums. You know, a nice big gold or silver coin has a satisfying clunk, 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 clunk. Bong, bong, bong as it goes down. Then this widow comes along. Imagine her now. Elderly. Probably bent over. There were no treatments for osteoporosis in those days. If you lived long enough to be a widow, you were probably more woman. You were probably bent over. Poor. Shabby robe. Saul that has definitely seen better days wrapped around her. She puts in two little coins. Little copper coins. You don't get bong, bong. You get tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. And Jesus says she's put in more than everybody else. The apostles know that's not true. They've heard the bong, 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 and they've heard the tinkle, 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 and they know the difference. What does he mean she's put in more than anybody else? That's the picture. It's what it looks like. It's what it sounds like. Print that out and put it in your wallet. Put it in your mind. Or you can pull it out and look at it and listen to it every once in a while. Because it's an important picture. Why is it an important picture? I don't mean it's a nice picture, it's a pretty picture, but why is it important? Well, let's look at some of the details of this little narrative. She put in two small coins worth a few cents. This is an insight I got from a fellow who was deacon here years ago, Brother Juan Garcia. Two coins, it's not by accident. If you were down to your last coin and you were a genuinely religious purpose person, what the hell, and you tossed the last coin into the treasury box. But not the last two. That's irrational. If you've got two coins, it's obvious, it's simple. One for God and one for me. I go to the temple and I toss one in the treasury box and I use the other to buy some bread for the night. Isn't that what you would have told her? If you were in the temple and she came by and asked your opinion, wouldn't you have told her that? Yeah, cool, go ahead, be generous. Toss one of the coins in, take the other one home and buy some bread. That's not what she does. In this irrational generosity, she throws in both coins. There's no reason for that. She's already made the gesture, just giving away half. She's proven her love for God. It makes no sense. She is irrationally generous. Mark that away. When you see that picture, when you pull her out of the wallet in your mind and look at her, think of her as irrationally generous. But what else does it say? Well, our translation says she contributed all that she had her whole life. Most translations will say her whole livelihood or all that she had to live on. And that's accurate, but it misses a connection. Because Greek doesn't have a word for livelihood. It uses the word for life. Livelihood is about the fourth meaning of the Greek word for life. So what it says here in the Greek is ebelon holon ton bion altes. See how close Greek is to English? Ebalen, you know, ball, to throw. She threw in holon, hole. Ton bion, bios, you know, biology, all this, her life, altes, hers. She threw in her whole life. Now, people understand, you know, the words have more than one meaning and the different layers of meaning. It's clearly talking about livelihood. They don't think she slit her wrists and bled in the treasury or anything. But when you hear the word in the livelihood sense, the primary meaning echoes her whole life. What does it echo to? Where have you heard it before? 3 weeks ago, the end of chapter 10. It's the end of Act 3, that little three-act play where Jesus is trying to talk to them about the Passion. They're doing stupid stuff, and then he's trying to teach. And after total frustration for three rounds of this, he finally says to them, look, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for the many. He gives his life. This old lady contributed her whole life. The apostles still haven't gotten it, but she gets it. Like Jesus, she contributes her whole life. This is an echo, an arc from chapter 10 to chapter 12. Where else have we seen a widow in Mark? That's significant. They only show up twice. The other one, she's not identified as a widow. They don't use the word, but you can quickly figure it out. The very beginning, chapter 1. Jesus is baptized by John and tempted by the devil. And then he calls his first disciples, Peter and Andrew and James and John. And then he goes to shul with them on a Saturday morning, like good pious Jews always do. And as religious people do all over the world, when he comes out, they go to breakfast together. So they go over to Peter's for breakfast. And Peter's mother-in-law is sick. She's there. Obviously, right? She's a widow. I mean, if her husband was still alive, she wouldn't be living with her son-in-law. She'd be living with her husband. The fact that she's living with Peter tells you she's a widow. They tell him about her, and Jesus goes over and takes her hand, and the fever left her, and again, translation problem. Most translations will say, she got up immediately and began to wait on them. Well, that's not inaccurate, but it misses the echo. The word in Greek is not wait on. The word in Greek is serve. She began to serve them. So now we've got this grand arc. The two widows from chapter 1 to chapter 12. And each of them has an arc right in there to chapter 10. The first widow begins to serve Jesus immediately. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. The second widow gave her life. Her whole life. And Jesus gives his life as a ransom for the many. Again, the apostles don't get it. The apostles are like this scribe here. Be careful not to read that with a comma. You can say, beware of the scribes, who like to go about in long robes and so on. It sounds like all the scribes. Well, in the immediately preceding passage, Jesus just had a very good discussion with a scribe, and they were approving of each other. So it's not condemning all scribes or all the religious leaders of the time. But there are a lot of them who are religiously thick-headed, going around in long robes and looking for places of honor. Who does that sound like? Our own beloved 12 apostles, right? The stuff they were doing for the previous three chapters? No, we don't want to hear about any suffering in Jerusalem. We want to talk about which one of us is the greatest. We want to talk about who gets to sit at your right hand and at your left. They don't get it. But this widow gets it. Peter's mother-in-law gets it. Not from any great store of learning from which they can rationalize the whole thing, but from their God. They know who Jesus is. They know who God is. God is irrationally generous. I mean, isn't that true? Doesn't that match your experience? Is there anything you've done to deserve what you've gotten in life? The amount of forgiveness that you've been given, the amount of love that you've been given, whatnot? And as a universe, you know, if you were God, I were God, long time ago, we'd have just torn that piece of paper off the pad, crumpled it up, and said, nah, that didn't work. I'll try another universe somewhere else. Next one will be better. But God doesn't do that. God goes on loving us. God is just irrationally generous with us. That's who our God is. In creation, in covenant, in giving us His Son. All of this, God is irrationally generous. And so is Jesus. Jesus comes to serve and to give His life. If you find that hard to imagine, imagine this old lady in the tattered shawl and the tinkle, tinkle, tinkle of the two little copper coins finding their way down into the box. Irrationally generous, she gave her whole life. Now, we are very much like the disciples and like these scribes, right? We want what's good for me. And we think we know what's good for me. To be powerful, to be wealthy, to be important, to be recognized, all of this is good for me. And I'm going to seek it. Until I get it. Find out how hollow it is. Is that all there is? Is that all there is? It doesn't work. But I keep on seeking it. Like the hamster on the wheel, I keep on seeking it. It's not where it's to be found. Be like this widow. Be like Jesus. Be like God. Instead of trying to pull everything into yourself, give yourself away. Not just your stuff away, give yourself away. When you lose your life, you will find it. When you give your life away, you will save it. And you'll discover who you are. Who you can be. You know, I don't know why we don't do it more often. Because you've done it and I've done it here and there. We know it works. You feel satisfied. You feel fulfilled. You feel like you've opened up a new dimension of your being. But you get scared. It's much easier to go back and go back to that stuff that I'm familiar with. Run the wheel. Run the rat race. Seek after power and glory and wealth and whatnot, whatnot. And yet we know that doesn't work, but we keep doing it. What we know does work, we don't do. We're like the apostles. Jesus keeps pounding it into our heads. So try this one more thing. That picture in your wallet. This will. Take it out in your mind once in a while and look at it. Listen to it. See her. Listen to the tinkle of the coins. Know that her irrational generosity is who God is, who Jesus is, and who you can be, and who you will be if you really want to be happy with yourself. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.